Welcome back. In part two of our interview with Josiah Tualamalii, Chair of the Pacific Youth and Leadership Transformation Council, we drill down into communications and engagement tactics when reaching out to Pacific millennials. Make sure to take notes. There are plenty of practical tips for doing this more effectively in your workplace or business.
A lot of ad agencies and organisations, they traditionally target the churches because they've always been a place of influence over Pacific peoples, but what are the channels of communication for Pacific youth?
Church is good. Sometimes church can be the way to reach them. I would say if you are connecting with the church, the youth group is probably the easiest way to do it. Youth group isn't always on the Sunday, and it's often more relaxed. If you feel like you know someone in the community who can help you get access, that you build trust with them, that can be a neat way to connect. Whether you just want to play some sport or share some stories, talk about what you're doing, that can be a really neat way in. Groups like CocoNet, that's an online, they've got like Facebook and Twitter account, that is quite well used. Looking for the key social media influencers, we're seeing some Pacific young people who I hope soon will have the profile of William Wairua, the guy who's going around and increasing young Māori social media use. But those kinds of people, connect with the churches, connect with those in social media who have influence.
What are some of the barriers that you see with trying to communicate effectively with Pacific youth?
I think the first one is if you're in a position of decision-making or authority, and a Pacific young person doesn't look at you in the face, or they might not sound articulate when they're talking to you, I would suggest worth not assuming that they've been disrespectful or that they don't like you. What can be happening is in our community, or in the different Pacific communities, young people are taught the pathway to leadership is through service. It often means they aren't the ones speaking out the front or aren't the ones who are making the key decisions. When they may not look at you, it's actually a sign sometimes of respect that they don't want to make eye contact or say something which might offend you. That old saying, being seen and not heard, it's not a thing of disrespect. They are trying to respect you in a way that they understand. Being aware of that cultural view, it may not apply for New Zealand-born young people or those who are discovering identity, like Afrikaans, like myself. When you do ask for their opinion, if it takes a while for them to share something, it's probably because they're building trust and they want to get to know you. And that's the same with a lot of the Pacific communities in New Zealand. There's been a number of things which have happened in our history which have made it really hard for our mātua and elders to trust decision makers and to trust key leaders or just people who represent our country. Those attitudes get passed on to our young people, and it's of no fault of their own, but just being aware that things like the Dawn Raid, things like New Zealand's colonial administration in Samoa and other parts of the Pacific continue to have an impact. Build trust. Show them that you do care and that you're there for the long haul, not just for a short time.
What about some of the stereotypes that you've seen about Pacific youth that are negative or false?
One of them would be like when someone comes up to you and asks you to be able to do like a prayer or like a karakia in your Pacific tongue when you can't speak it, just assuming that you can, or assuming that you've been and visited the country that your family are from, assuming that you have a faith or that you're a Christian, assuming that you're straight or that you have a huge family. And we saw a cartoon in the Christchurch Press maybe 3 or 4 years ago where they portrayed a Pacific or Māori family who had lotto tickets, who were drunk. You know, all those negative stereotypes we have in the media, well, what people sometimes can think our community's like, when none of that is really true. Very small number of people who are like that, and that's in every community. We look at it and we're like, that's not the whole story. But I guess for some people, it's easy to stick with that. And confronting colonisation and the impact of colonisation, like what would New Zealand be like if it wasn't colonised? It's really difficult for many people. I had someone who messaged my Facebook page this week, and I put up a post saying that I'd love New Zealand to be a treaty-based society. And he said, oh, New Zealand wouldn't have any of the things that it has. We wouldn't have cars, we wouldn't have electricity, we wouldn't have any innovation at all if it wasn't for colonisation. That way of thinking is really sad, and it undermines the cultural value and the significant leadership that our communities had back when they were navigating the Pacific using the stars. They were way more dexterous in their sailing and made James Cook and others amazed. I think wouldn't have taken a long time for Pacific communities, for Māori to far surpass in whatever way in adapting the new technology. That way of thinking defeats the cripple or holds back our young people in our country.
Does it concern you that some of the lack of knowledge, lack of cultural intelligence that, you know, existed in your father's time is still hanging around in your generation?
Yeah, I'm hopeful it can change. And I guess work like yours is a big part of that. But something that I'm seeing more and more is that as a country, we need to set an aspiration for what cultural competence looks like across our workplaces and families. Otherwise, it just continues to not really go anywhere, as it hasn't for the last 30 years.
So predicting that in 30 years' time, when your generation is in the leadership roles, that it will be browner, what kind of future would you like to see when you are 52?
Well, I can't even imagine the next 10 years, but but I'd love to see Pacific people visible and influential in decision-making, and the structures or some of the attitudes which make it difficult to have disappeared. I also want to see the same for women in leadership and also other ethnic communities, sexuality, all of those things. If we look at what's the difference between our country performing at its best, like we just think in a business, the most selfish way possible to think about it, it's that everybody feels like they belong and it's like everybody has a place and that they're valued for who they are and what they bring. If that's what our country looks like in 30 years, the money won't matter anymore.
So you're kind of laying the groundwork through pilot. Can you tell me about some of the projects that you're involved with, particularly the Youth Parliament?
The Youth Parliament was an event that brought us together, and so we wanted to run another one to share the opportunity with others. But pilot, we care about Pacific young people participating in democracy. So we have a thing called I Speak, where we get decision makers to come in and speak to Pacific youth on a key issue that matters to them. We've had discussions on the Trans-Pacific Partnership, on deep sea oil drilling, on poverty and housing for the recent election, and we also had Alpito William Seal and Alfred Nuttall have a discussion about the future for Pacific people this election. So I guess what we want is all of these things to become just every day, all the time, our community speaking into decision making. And part of it is decision makers making themselves available to come and see our community and saying that it is valuable giving time and if you're responding to these young people. So we collect up all the things that they say. We write to the different ministers or people who can make a change and say, this is what they're thinking. Co-decision making is one of the best ways to increase mental health because they can see themselves as part of the process. And it's just the empowerment you see on one of their faces when you see something that they've said speaking to a big change matters. One of the changes that we have been able to do in the last year was a Pacific young person came to us and said, I want to be able to wear iwhaitanga, so Samoan formal cultural wear, similar to a kilt at my school. That was a huge thing for him to feel like he belonged. The school only has 30 young people of Pacific ethnicities, but we managed to convince the board this was important enough that they should do it, and they listened. After that, the whole team was so fired up, we said to Parliament, you need to change your rules on what formal cultural wear is, and formal cultural wear be included as formal wear for Parliament. And they did. And not only that, we asked them to change their rules on what languages can be spoken in the House, and they affirmed that all languages can be spoken. And we see Aupito William Seal give his oath in Samoan, the first time that that's ever been done in the history of New Zealand. And those things, I mean, for some people, it may not seem a lot, but for our communities where our languages and our role models who speak these key languages aren't always able to share that, this is a key way we can spread that and increase the profile of our languages.
What are the challenges for Pacific youth who don't have confidence? We hear that there's a lack of our young people getting into corporate jobs or technology. Mm-hmm. What stops them from reaching that?
Yes. No, you are 100%. We are the Pacific nerds. But the reason why we're the Pacific nerds is because we've been mentored from a really young age. I started being mentored by my community when I was 14. when people invest their time really young, your opportunities are opened up because you're more aware of what's going on in the world. Not every Pacific young person gets that opportunity. We have all been very fortunate in that sense. And so that's why when the programs we run, we try and do that, because it's something that's not always happening. Go back to something we were talking about earlier. In the different islands, often people are mentored for different roles, and so not everybody will have a speaking role or a leadership role that's always visible. I think businesses and leaders being able to see that soft skills, problem solving, creativity, those other things which are needed, and especially when automation and all these other big changes are happening, those soft skills are happening, not in a way that we can notice in a Western sense, but if you understand the cultural context, you can see that's happening, and those skills can be mentored to be more prominent.
What are some tips that you can give people for communicating with Pacific youth, you know, like styles of language?
I think the easiest one is just to be your authentic self. Don't try and be something else. If you've seen Sione's Wedding, there's a guy in Sione's Wedding who, I don't know if he's putting it on, but, you know, he starts to talk like, oh, yeah, oh, bro, that's so cool. Oh, also, you know, that's not me, and that's not what we want to do. We want to be our true selves when we're talking to these young people. But be aware that some of the words we may use, some of the experiences we had are not similar to them. And think about the other way. They've got stuff that you don't have or you aren't aware of. And so it's just being respectful, being inquisitive. When you hear something different, not making them feel like different is bad. We often talk about in the Pacific how we've got strong hierarchies and we have key leaders who represent the community. To many people, that's actually more democratic because these people are from the families of those around them and they speak back into the community and a direct voice for them, whereas others in New Zealand would say they don't have that opportunity and feel very disconnected from politicians. So I just say listen and be aware that you may not have experience or understand what they're doing, but if you aren't sure, keep asking. Go and seek other advice. As soon as you say, or if you say that that's wrong, if you don't understand it, I think you'll cut off any hope of the relationship.
And what are some ways for attracting or recruiting Pacific youth? How can they make the organisation seem more attractive to join?
If you're serious, it's going to take more than just having some designs or sending some flyers to a Pacific community network, or, you know, just finding the right email address and getting them to pass it on. No, from the work that I've seen at the University of Canterbury and Utter Institute of Canterbury, we've done big strategic change for Pacific people to be supported on campus. It's more about, in every area of work, you being ready and being prepared, getting the right advice, so that when a Pacific young person is there, they're not feeling so isolated that they don't want to stay, or that if something matters to them, they can go and talk to someone. I was hearing at Deloitte yesterday that a Tongan woman has made a network for them there. There's 8 Pacific staff in this one unit which they kind of hang out and support each other. Going in and that something like that existing can be a really good way to help those new ones who may not feel confident or comfortable approaching decision makers or people in authority and tell them what they're really thinking, because they don't want to offend or upset you, but they may be more willing to give advice through someone else. If it is a serious thing, I'd just say have a look at the University of Canterbury Pacific strategy. The different things it looks at, so the way you do it in your marketing, the way you do it in your operations, how you have Pacific leadership speaking into the leadership of the organisation. I notice that when you don't have someone who has eyes on it and understands it at the top, or contributing to the decision at the top and that being really supported, then for the rest of the organisation, it's not going to be delivered well. It's going to be very tokenistic.
Why is it important that organisations, government departments, make a serious effort to understand and communicate better with Pacific youth?
Well, I guess we've got 2 options. We can do it because we can see that it can lead to the step change that the communities want and the communities need, so that a lot of the negative statistics and stereotypes go away, or we can just keep doing what we've always done, get the result that we've always got. and keep complaining. We have to put the effort in because we're scaffolding for the future, and if we're not using our time now to change the legacy, then there's really no other point.